Afternoon, everybody. We are now set for argument on case number 81214 regarding AGM. Is everybody ready to proceed?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Justices, yes.
Okay. Good afternoon. The state is ready to proceed.
Okay, great. And so we're set for 30 minutes today, 15 minutes per side. So Ms. Ristenpart will be going for the petitioner. How much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal?
We'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, so what'll happen by telling me that is just that the yellow light comes on and there's the tone when you get to 4 minutes, but the time keeps going, so it's up to you to make sure you actually have some time reserved. And obviously, for Ms. Noble, I know you know the process well because you've been here many times, but when it gets down to 5 minutes is when your yellow light and tone will come, just giving you the warning that you only have 5 minutes left. With that being said, Ms. Ristenpart, please proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. Today we're here on a request for a writ of prohibition or an alternative writ of mandamus regarding in re AG. The issue before the court today is a singular one. The juvenile court lost its jurisdiction to issue a written order certifying AGM to be tried as an adult for an offense alleged to occur when he was a child because the juvenile court filed its written order certifying AGM after AGM turned 21 years of age. The case facts regarding the criminal allegations, which the state spent a lot of time fleshing out in its answer, those are not relevant to the issue at hand before the court and obviously are greatly disputed between the parties. What's relevant in the operative case facts for this court to be concerned about is that AGM was 17 years old when he and Ms. Smith had sexual relations. Law enforcement did not conduct any investigative work for 21 months, and when law enforcement started investigating again and arrested AGM, he was 19 years of age. The state filed a petition asking the juvenile court to certify AGM to be tried as an adult. The juvenile court held a certification hearing on February 19th and 20th of 2020. On April 29th, 2020, AGM turned 21 years of age. On May 14th, 2020, the juvenile court issued its order granting adult certification. And why this is and why the juvenile court lost jurisdiction is because juvenile jurisdiction is statutorily created. Pursuant to NRS 62B.410 subsection 2, it is a limited and exclusive jurisdiction. The judge of the juvenile court has only powers and duties set forth by Nevada's Juvenile Justice Code and must exercise jurisdiction pursuant to those provisions, as this court held in State versus Stephen P. in 2013. Now, the state makes a lot of argument as to, well, this is unfair, you know, every crime should have a court. And the truth is, and the fact is that juvenile court did have proper jurisdiction when this case was initiated. They lost jurisdiction when they issued the written order transferring jurisdiction after AGM had already turned 21 years.
Ms. Ristenpart?
We know.
Ms. Ristenpart?
Yes.
Hi, this is Justice Herndon in Carson City.
Good afternoon, Justice. Quick
question for you, if I might, in regard to the jurisdiction issue. In the Barron case, when this court ruled in 2012, it stated that jurisdiction is something that's decided at the time the proceedings are instituted in the court. Shouldn't we be reading the statute then to say that jurisdiction is decided at the time the proceedings are instituted in the justice court, such that juvenile court, such that juvenile court has jurisdiction to institute proceedings prior to a child turning 21? They would not have jurisdiction, obviously, save and except for the 2009 amendments to institute proceedings after a child turns 21. But your argument is really about the proceedings didn't finish before the child turned 21 because the order wasn't signed.
Correct, Your Honor, and that the court lost jurisdiction. Factually, our case is very different than Barron, which was that the juvenile was not found until after he turned 21. In our case, AGM was arrested when he was 19 years old, and they instituted and started the juvenile proceedings when he was 19 in adult certification and the motion request for. So as Barron has held and this court has held, the juvenile court did have proper jurisdiction at age 19 going forward. They lost it as soon as he turned 21 on April 29th of 2020.
So what do we do with the other statements in the Barron case, basically to the effect that, you know, some court always has jurisdiction. So arguably, if the juvenile court, which as you say is a limited statutory jurisdiction, if it lost jurisdiction, didn't it just lose it to the district court criminal division and that's where it can proceed?
No, and I think that's a red herring argument that the state is wanting to confuse this court with. When under the Barron case, the juvenile court had proper jurisdiction. Some court did. It was the juvenile court. They lost that jurisdiction because they failed to write its written order transferring to adult court pursuant to decades of case law stating that it must be a written finalized order. And so therefore, yes, the juvenile court lost its jurisdiction and the case is just done.
And so
can you elaborate on Justice Kiddish?
Go ahead, Justice Pickering.
Thank you. The question I have is you're seeking extraordinary writ relief, and why do you say that the case has to just be gone in your words of a moment ago? Why if its jurisdiction expired when he turned 21, why couldn't the charges be initiated in justice court as an adult at that point?
Because this isn't a mandatory adult certification. This was a discretionary adult certification. This was for an offense alleged to have occurred when AGM was 17 years old. So he firmly fell within juvenile jurisdiction.
So, but they're arguing that it was mandatory as well as discretionary, as I understand it.
They are incorrect in their argument. This was not a mandatory certification. There are three different types of adult certification from juvenile court. The first is a mandatory certification where juvenile jurisdiction never existed by statute. There are certain offenses such as murder that is just not deemed to be a delinquent act, and therefore they don't have juvenile jurisdiction. In this case, it was under two issues that the state petitioned for adult certification. The first being the presumptive, which is a rebuttable presumption that defense would have to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the person should not be certified as an adult. The other one they sought under was discretionary, where the juvenile court exercises discretion by considering a decisional matrix of factors, determining the public safety and interest, and whether that'd be better served by transferring the juvenile to an adult proceeding. And so because of that, it's not a mandatory certification, and juvenile court had to exercise discretion under both presumptive and discretionary to determine whether or not to send AGM to adult certification or to adult court.
Well, didn't Judge Robb find that certification was mandatory in her written order under Section 2 of the statute?
Once Judge Robb makes a decision that defense did not, by clear and convincing evidence, rebut the presumption under the presumptive, then she does state accurately that she has to certify the juvenile to adult court. That being said, though, you are then relying upon the state's argument that somehow oral pronouncements are now going to be binding law for dispositional orders, which is upending decades of law stating that it must be written, finalized, and filed, and signed. And that did not happen until after the court lost its jurisdiction and AGN turned 21 years of age.
One other question I had to kind of circle back, and I apologize, I probably should have asked this question first, but I was reminded when Justice Pickering referenced the petition. Why are we here on a petition when it would seem that the juvenile court's order was a final appealable order such that an appeal would be the appropriate vehicle to challenge that order versus a petition?
Because the writ of prohibition is specifically for when a court does not have proper jurisdiction. And that's why I filed a writ of prohibition or an alternative, a writ of mandamus. But I do think the extraordinary relief is the writ of prohibition. There is no appealable process because the next step would be in adult court. And the appeal, so the dispositional, I'm arguing that there is no order to appeal because that order is null and void as the juvenile jurisdiction is gone. And they lost their juvenile court's right to file that order.
But wouldn't the prohibition writ arise at the point at which the adult court exercises jurisdiction over him? And if the order was entered improperly by Judge Robb, why wouldn't that be directly appealable under 62D 400?
Because there's no more juvenile court jurisdiction. So how would I appeal that issue below the juvenile? I'm sorry, Justice.
No, I'm sorry. I misspoke, and I didn't mean to interrupt you. 62D 500 talks about direct right of appeal. And it seems to me if she had lost jurisdiction, so she shouldn't enter the order. I guess I can see it either way. I see your point.
In regards to the other points, the state, I think, is really trying to have this court carve out some kind of excuse or exception as to why, though they missed the deadline here and they lost jurisdiction, in this particular case, they should still be allowed to proceed forward in prosecution. And the excuses that the state presents forward, none of them, one, show good cause. And there's no exception to juvenile jurisdiction that, but for good cause, somehow the court can extend jurisdiction past the age of 21 in this particular situation. And also, of course, the COVID excuse, this court has already ruled on other cases, is not an excuse. I'd like to reserve my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. All right, Ms. Noble.
Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Jennifer Noble, and I represent the Real Party and Interest of the State of Nevada. This court has recognized in Seven Minors and other cases that the ability to hold certain juvenile offenders accountable in the adult system is an important public safety valve. It's sometimes necessary to protect the community. And public protection is the general controlling principle of the transfer decision. This is a sexual assault and strangulation case. And certification of this petitioner, who was 17 at the time of the alleged offense, was mandatory. It was not discretionary. This petitioner was afforded due process contemplated by Three Minors. He had counsel. He had a hearing before a district court judge who carefully considered the investigation, the testimony, and the application of NRS 62B.390. And the transcript of that
hearing. Ms. Noble, Justice Kadish in Carson City, before the judge had to certify the case, she first needed to have the hearing and make the findings, or at least consider whether there was clear and convincing evidence of these matters under 62B.390(3), right? Given the nature of this charge, that's the path she had to go down to make the finding for certification, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And so even though we talk about it being mandatory, it's not like a direct file in the district court system. It's supposed to go to juvenile court. It goes through an investigation process and then a hearing for the court to make these findings and evaluate whether there's clear and convincing evidence of any of these pieces that might rebut certification. Is that accurate?
Yes, Justice Kadish, that is accurate, and thank you for the clarification.
Okay.
In this case, district court did do just that. And I would note that the record reflects that no real evidence was presented in rebuttal to the presumption of mandatory certification. So given the nature of the charges, the petitioner's age, as well as the lack of evidence to rebut that presumption, the court reached, I think, what was a carefully considered and correct decision. It was quite detailed on the record, and a couple of days after that, there was a minute order entered that detailed and pretty much mirrored the later written order. I wanted to touch upon something that petitioner's counsel talked about regarding the passage of time, and she stated that it took law enforcement 21 months to investigate this case. That is not reflected in the record. There are questions during the hearing regarding what took so long, etc., and the police officer indicates that petitioner moves, he has some difficulty locating him, etc. And I would also note that the passage of time in this case, which is the real unfortunate conundrum that we find ourselves trying to sort out, is a convergence of multiple factors. And those factors are not all attributable to the government. In this case, we have multiple requests to continue from petitioner's various attorneys. We have one counsel show up and say he doesn't understand juvenile. We have another continuance because petitioner's current counsel showed up to a hearing on the motion to dismiss or the motion to rebut the presumption, and she didn't have her witnesses present. So we eventually get to that hearing on February 19th and February 20th of 2020, but it's after several different things happen, and not all of those delays are attributable to the state. One of the primary arguments that petitioner has is that orders need to be in writing, and that's certainly an argument that is somewhat persuasive, but I'd note that they're citing the Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 58, Rust, Tenor versus Babcock, and Fitz-Harris to support that proposition. But there's no authority supporting the idea that the Nevada Rules of Civil Procedure, first of all, apply to juvenile proceedings. And the other cases that are cited aren't juvenile cases. We have Rust, which has to do with a school district superintendent being fired. Tenor is a habeas proceeding, and Farnham is a money judgment case. And really what they're looking at are prematurely filed notices of appeal. In the Department of Children and Family Services versus the 8th Judicial District Court, we have a contempt order in a dependency case, but there's also an acknowledgement that oral orders pertaining to administrative matters that don't allow a party to gain advantage over another party are valid and enforceable. And many juvenile cases, including 7 minors and 3 minors, refer to certification as a finding of, quote, transfer to the adult court. We have some recent 2019 jurisprudence. Sanson is the case that remarks that transfer from one district court department to another are administrative in nature, but I will concede that that's in the context of an order of refusal. But there is precedent for this court relying on oral findings underlying a written order when we're reviewing a juvenile certification and whether or not it's proper. Versus state, the court relies heavily on what it calls the judge's, quote, oral decision. Later in that case, they called the verbal opinion. And then comment that the record allowed for meaningful review. In Lee versus state, we have a similar scenario where the reviewing court is looking at the record of the judge's oral findings to determine the propriety of the judge's certification. Regarding the argument that the juvenile court is a court of limited jurisdiction and that Judge Robb was therefore limited in being able to issue an order, a written order, past the age of 21st, past the petitioner's 21st birthday, I'd observe that Judge Robb is an elected judge of the Second Judicial District Court. That's a court of general jurisdiction. It has authority to preside over any case arising from a sexual assault, and it has the same constitutional power and authority as any other district court judge. That's according to Article 6, Section 6 of the Nevada Constitution, Landreth versus Malik, and State versus Barron, as I believe Justice Herndon observed. Some court always has jurisdiction over a criminal defendant. In Barron, they talk about some court always has jurisdiction, and people who commit crimes in Nevada are punishable by the laws of this state. So here we have basically the question of whether or not the district court's oral findings, oral decisions, can somehow alleviate or counter the argument that the written order was issued without jurisdiction. But one of the factors, there are factors that contributed, as I said, to the passage of time in this case. And one of those factors, which I don't think is insignificant, is the ongoing emergency that the COVID-19 pandemic presented. So we have this hearing occur on February 19th and February 20th. March 12th, Governor Sisolak declares a state of emergency. Shortly after that, the Second Judicial District Court files administrative orders, and those orders recognize that the pandemic will inevitably affect court operations, even speedy trial rights. So the state drafts an order regarding the mandatory certification. Petitioner and the state can't agree upon its language, so the state submits, in advance of the petitioner's 21st birthday, competing orders for Judge Robb's signature. And what happens in the interim, again, is a disruption of court operations. Now, there's nothing in the record to directly state that the difficulties associated that with people going to their homes to work, et cetera, are what contributed to the delay in the issuance of the filing of the written order, but I think it's a reasonable inference that this court could draw. And so our position is that based on the totality of the circumstances in this case, this court should find it inappropriate to allow this petitioner to escape trial in any court. He was afforded due process and a fair hearing. A district court judge reached a thoughtful, reasoned decision regarding mandatory certification on a sexual assault and battery by strangulation, a case that presents a public safety concern that is part of that public safety valve that has been set up by the certification mechanism. Findings were announced on the record February 20th, 2020. A detailed minute order comes out on 227, and the written order that came out about 2 weeks after his 21st birthday mirrored those the record of her oral decision and the minute order. So this petitioner knew he had been certified. There's absolutely no prejudice to enforce that oral finding.
So, Ms. Noble, so I have a couple questions for you. First, by statute under 62B.410, 2, it appears to indicate the juvenile court only has jurisdiction until the child reaches 21 years of age. So what do we do with that, with the juvenile court entering a juvenile court order after he turns 21?
Well, thank you for the question, Justice Kagan. I would first observe that it's issued by Judge Robb, who's a district court judge. And second, an application of the rule requiring a written order leads to an absurd result in this case. So this court, if it wishes to, can find that during an ongoing emergency that has been recognized by the courts of the state, where the actions of not only the state but also the petitioner contributed to a delay in the certification finding, for purposes of jurisdiction, the effective date can be the date of the oral decision, not the date of the written order. Otherwise, the result that we get to is absurd because we're depriving the victim of a trial on the merits. There's no advantage gained by the state in enforcement of this transfer order.
So the case, the trial had happened February 19th. The court orally stated her ruling on February 20th. And I guess a proposed order isn't submitted until April 10th. At the trial itself, parties all seemed to be very cognizant of the fact that he was about to turn 21. In fact, part of the argument you made, not you, your colleague, I guess, made about why the case should be certified is that if it stays in juvenile court, he's turning 21 in 2 months and we're not going to be able to supervise him. So knowing that urgency, why didn't someone submit an order like before April?
Thank you for the question, Justice Kadish, and it's one I was expecting. Some of that falls outside of the record, but you can see that there is a submission of competing orders. But in any event, the state did submit it in advance of the petitioner's 21st birthday. So while I could see that that would be frustrating, the petitioner, frustrating to this court, we're still within that time frame. And the remedy shouldn't be to punish the victim because it's still timely submitted.
All right. So I have a couple other statutory questions then. We have the change, I guess, made in 2009 under 62B330, which I guess, you know, apparently requested by multiple parties that were working on some fixes for juvenile justice statutes, and including a spokesperson from your office that talked about needing this change in subsection 3E to specifically allow if there's an A or B, you know, felony committed at least 16 before 18, but not identified until after 20 years, 3 months, or not identified until 21, then in that circumstance it can go to district court. And as part of the legislative history, there's a discussion about a case where a certification order got entered just 4 days before the person turned 21, and thank goodness, because otherwise we would have lost jurisdiction. So how do we reconcile that, not only the legislative history, which sometimes is useful, but sometimes not, but the statutory changes themselves and the statutory rule of interpretation about the expression of one thing is the exclusion of another? Arguably, the statute specifies certain situations that you can go to district court as opposed to juvenile court, and this case isn't covered because, in fact, it was filed in juvenile court long before he turned 21. So how do you address that?
Well, I think, thank you for the question, Justice Kadish. And I think, first of all, I'm not entirely aware of all the discussions about fixing or changing these statutes. But I would say, even if this court finds that just Judge Robb, acting in the family court capacity, was required to issue an order prior to the petitioner's 21st birthday, she did that. And what we're trying to say is that the oral decision has the effect of transferring the case and that it's administrative in nature. And as I think I stated somewhat quickly earlier, there is some support for the idea that when you're transferring from one division to another, it's an administrative decision. It's not a dispositional decision.
But, I mean, there were certain specific findings that had to be made to have a proper certification.
Yeah, they were made. They were made very clearly on the record. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So essentially what you're saying, Ms. Noble, is that the oral decision, which I agree was a lengthy decision entered by Judge Raw, was dispositional. You agree with that. But that the order that effectuates the transfer was the ministerial part of it, meaning the written order that says now it goes to Justice Court?
May I answer Justice Hernan's question?
Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, that is what we're saying. And basically, under the totality of the circumstances in this case, strict application of a written order requirement, we reach a very unjust result.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right, Ms. Ristenpark, you have 3.5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Justices. I just would like to touch upon that last issue as to the state's claims that this is just an administrative matter and therefore somehow this court should find some exception to backtrack the written order to February 20th of 2020 when Judge Robb orally pronounced her findings. That is not the state of law in Nevada. And specifically, this is a dispositional order. This is, as this court has quoted, a juvenile certification to adult court is probably one of the most momentous and life-changing events for a juvenile. It's clearly dispositional. And in fact, the record also, the state just told you that there was an issue between the parties as to how the order should be issued. And obviously, we sent competing orders to the juvenile court in order for them to make the determination, which they filed that written order of the disposition after AGM turned 21 years of age, after they had lost jurisdiction. There are firm deadlines in criminal justice proceedings. Just a few. notice of appeal, you have to file within 30 days. Also, this court has found the death penalty notice, that if they've lost it and haven't shown good cause, then they lost their chance to file a death penalty request. The law is the law. And the fact of the matter here is, as much as the court is trying to sway you that it's going to leave a distasteful result in this matter, AGM turned 21 years of age before the juvenile court issued their dispositional order transferring his jurisdiction to adult court. Based on all the law and also on the statutes, the juvenile court had no authority to issue that order. The case is just done. And that's why I am asking for this court to consider granting the writ of prohibition and stating that that order is null and void as the juvenile court had lost jurisdiction. And I do want to acknowledge, justices, that I'm asking for an extraordinary relief because, frankly, this is an extraordinary case, that this is possibly one of maybe never to be seen again issues before this court based upon how these proceedings went. And for the state to claim that there was dilatory matters prior to the adult certification, the truth, and as Justice Kadish pointed out, the state was very well aware of when AGM was going to turn 21. No less than 10 different times in that certification hearing did the state argue we have to certify him because we can't do anything. He's going to turn 21. And everything you've heard today, justices, we haven't heard why it took the juvenile court over 4 months to issue their dispositional order.
So I apologize, we got 30 seconds. If there juvenile court jurisdiction, what do we do with the argument that, look, Judge Robb is a district judge and she has general jurisdiction, so couldn't she still enter the order?
So she is only granted statutorily, by statute, jurisdiction over juvenile matters pursuant to 62B.140. And that is the only reason that Judge Robb gets to exercise discretion over juvenile matters. May I proceed?
Okay, got a few seconds to wrap up.
Thank you. So with that, she lost her right and her jurisdiction because it's no longer statutorily after AGM turned 21. Thank you, Justices.
Thank you. It's a, certainly an interesting case that, and you've given us a lot to think about. So we do appreciate your briefing and your presentation today. This case will stand submitted and will be in recess until the next call of the court.